This episode is part of our ongoing series with NI Connections, where each month we've the chance to sit down with someone interesting from Northern Ireland who's living and working overseas. To find out more about our global diaspora, listen to previous episodes in the series and sign up for a free monthly newsletter. Please visit niconnections.com. Thanks so much, and really hope you enjoy today's conversation.
Yeah. It's great. Okay, how did you guys meet?
Art college, we met.
Yeah.
College, yeah. How many years ago? Seven years ago.
We went to art college for about 4 years. I was never really in, and then we met sort of after art
Towards
college.
The end. It was a bit basically bizarre. We were finishing our degrees, and the last month to 3 months we became friends at art college.
Ever?
Yeah.
And where are you guys both from separately? Give me your origin stories.
Like, where are we physically from, landscape wise?
Yeah, sure.
Where should we begin?
I mean, you want to tell me where you're philosophically from?
Or? I grew up on a, yeah,
historically
this
from.
Get very long. I grew up on a Christmas tree farm, so I was like outside all the time. Love being outside. That's it, really. That's the core of it. Always grew up with a massive appreciation of trees. Really, that's it. Yeah.
You've massive hands. When you shook my hand, I was like, what type of manual labor did this boy do? And that's what it was.
They're ruined. Bone dry. Can't get them back to normal now. Yeah. No sensitivity.
So you would have been doing everything with Christmas tree farm. You'd have been lugging stuff.
Yeah, no. It's just a small farm. It's very small. It's about 20 acres. And it's, I guess my father is very into trees and anything wild, and it's all a bit of a mess in a very
organized way.
in a very kind of organized way.
So it's pretty seasonal though as well, because it's like obviously you're working throughout the year, but then there's that crunch time.
Yeah,
that like very. You know, there's lots of
and that's where you earn all your money.
Yeah, lots of traders around the world.
Stressful in that
like
way.
I was Christmas market guys. I was chatting a few of them yesterday.
Yeah,
and they're like, yeah, we make all our money in December. You're like, I really hope you have a good September or December. You know,
yeah.
Where was the Christmas tree farm?
It's based just outside Lisburn, just outside Hillsborough. Yeah.
Cool.
185 Cumber Road.
Oh, I love it. Thank you. everyone, you can type it into Google Maps and see an aerial photo now. Where are you from?
I'm a little further away. I'm a little further north, originally from Ballyclare.
Nice.
Yeah, so I have all my family are there. And Shane always refers to me as the hillbilly of the two of us. So,
That's harsh.
That's awesome. Yeah, people from Ballyclare love it. Plenty of normal bass. You got to represent.
Yeah.
People are like fist pumping the air. They're like, I feel seen right now. This is so exciting. And like, give me anything. I just need like one or two wee kind of like things I can pull on later. Like, were your parents also farmers? Were they like into food? Like, what kind of like professional context were you surrounded by?
Yeah, I mean, well, we both come from farming backgrounds, I guess.
Yeah, but you personally?
I mean,
where did you come from? Ballyclare is not enough.
Well, yeah, I mean, my grandparents were farmers more so than my parents.
Yeah.
My parents are in engineering and in like finance, banking. And then, for food, in terms of food, you got your home cooked meals, but we didn't really have any real professional sense of food growing up.
Yeah. So, daughter of a banker, son of a Christmas tree farmer, what was the reaction of you said you want to go to art college?
It was fine. I never really knew what to do. There wasn't much reaction. There was, I guess both of us were trying to get out of Northern Ireland at the beginning. We sort of tried it. Didn't really work. We ended up coming back and starting the art college route there for the next 4 or 3 years.
So tell me about the first foray into the wild. Why did you guys want to leave?
Oh, flip, no idea. Young and frustrated.
Yeah, great.
That's
angsty.
It. Yeah.
Needed to get it out. And why did it fail?
Why did it fail? Why did we come back originally?
Yeah.
So originally we went, this is before we met, I went to Falmouth.
Where is that?
It was just, I think sometimes it takes going away somewhere, doesn't it, to realize the things you like about the place you come from, as simple as that. So
yeah,
it was just kind of lacking that grit or that edge, which I felt was here, but it took me going there to see it. So yeah.
Where is that place? I have no idea.
It's in Cornwall.
Okay.
Falmouth, yeah, right down like close enough to France.
Yeah.
It's a lovely place. Like, it would be an amazing place to have a holiday and relax. But, yeah, just wasn't right for me.
So you go through art college, any type of art in particular? I know there's a fine art background in there somewhere.
Both of us were different.
Both of us were, well, we were both within like the fine art degree. We were both enrolled in a fine art course, a bachelor's degree.
And is that the course where you do like lots and lots of different types of stuff?
Yeah, yeah. So you'll do like a foundational program, and then you'll have lots of sort of assessments. First of all, to see where you want to fit within that fine art realm. Yeah, and then you can then decide what to specialize in as such. But, I mean, that was Shane then, following that, received a scholarship for the Slade School of Fine Art in London. And that's really how we moved. Yeah. That was really why we moved to London.
Nice.
So we both decided that, well, we were both seeing one another then. And we said, right, well, there's no point one of us moving and one of us staying here. So, like, both of us decided to move. And we just started working in bakeries and bars and restaurants or anything just to get by, like just to pay rent, I guess.
That's a big sad life, isn't it?
I was a failure in that regard. I had a job lined up when I went there to work in the Anthony Gormley's artist studio, and I went, and that was great. I started, and it was good pay. It allowed us to get by, I guess, at the very beginning, just about. And then very quickly, like a month or two in, I left that job and started working in the bakery for free. So that was a disaster. We were pretty skint while living in London, but it was all...
But it was so worth it.
It was all worth it. Yeah, it was all worth it.
I think everyone should be broke in a big city when they're in their 20s, you know?
Yeah.
So I think it's really important.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree.
You learn a lot of cool stuff.
You do.
And all those jobs, like I'm sure you guys did the weirdest things.
Yeah, just the most... terrible jobs and didn't get paid sometimes. Like, that's...
But it was so worth it. Like, it was just such an invaluable time. Like, I felt like I loved it. I love London. Like, I love living there. I love being in the big city. I also like to come out of it, you know, both. Yeah. But, I just find it such a great time that because we were also just figuring out, like, what we really wanted to do, I guess, aside from, you know, you have a degree, but you don't really know. I didn't really know personally what I was going to do. I still had to sort of find myself.
So why did you end up interning at a bakery, for lack of a better term?
I guess, I mean, when I went to Slade, I pretty much felt like Hannah and I were doing it together.
Mm-hmm.
We talked about it a lot. We were sort of on the edge of whether we should go back to art college or not, because we weren't sure. Like, we never really questioned whether we were artists or not. That never really mattered to either of us. But like whether we should have kept going, like furthering art college, I doing a master's and so on, was difficult for us. So we took that opportunity and just went. And then we were trying to bring food and drink like directly into the practice, and it just felt like such a struggle the whole time. It just didn't really click in the end. It didn't really feel. Eventually, it just got to that stage. Like, why am I bringing everything into a gallery context? Why am I trying to twist and warp all of this? Why don't I just go?
Why don't we just go and look at it and travel and go and eat some nice food and, you know, go and drink some nice wine somewhere? Why don't we just go and really do it?
So you were trying to effectively like shoehorn like the food and the drink into this very...
Because it's what we did when we came out of
because
school.
It's all we sort of didn't know where else to go. Yeah, we didn't know what else to do.
Interesting.
So where
did you go after London?
France. We went to France. Shane at the time... I had like a 2001 Nissan Micra.
Oh yeah, man! Come on,
Tornado Grey.
I didn't realize there's a kind of clan behind
cult following.
So we took the Nissan Micra and we traveled over with like a one person tent, and we just said, "Right, we're going. We don't know when we're going to come back."
Have you seen the new Micras? Complete random.
No, are they big? Everything's growing.
No, they look. They look like so. Slick and awesome and cool looking. And you're like, mate, bring back the ugly bubble butt. Like, that's
the
what
Mr.
we
Bean
want.
Car.
Yeah.
The bubble butt.
So I feel like we could talk like a long time about your various travels. Give me the bits that I need to hear. Like, what's the important stuff that has shaped where you are now?
I think going to France for us was, just very quickly, it began off as a kind of bread journey. We got a few contacts there. We went and visited some so-called peasant farmers and bakers, and that was great. That led to another baker, another farmer, and then eventually it started sort of organically leading to natural winemakers. And then that was a whole other side, but very kind of similar to making bread in terms of, I mean, it's a fermentation on a different scale, but it's very tangible. That just led to one wine grower after the other.
You would have said, like, who do we go to next? And they say, you need to go and see such and such or whoever.
So we just ended up staying, working for some.
On a pilgrimage. Yeah. Going to see like different like rabbis.
Yeah.
Sit at my feet,
incredible.
I'll tell you about
it's my really
feet.
Weird when you look back and
pretty much like that, exactly. it was incredible. And there's so much to learn. Like, there's just so much, and time always felt so short. Like, you know,
I think for the first time we met, just we're within a group of people
that we really felt like we resonated.
And then
really
all of this, and we barely
with,
spoke a word of French.
Yeah.
And like, they barely spoke a word of English, and we still managed to get on just
so your communication fine. Became very much in like sharing the wine together. Mm. That was sort of how you were communicating. And it was great. It was incredible.
What is it about fermentation that does it for you? You guys,
it's alive.
I don't think we're huge fermentation nerds, though, so to speak. Like, I don't think that's us at all. I mean,
but it is. I think it's this idea of
it is a crazy thing. Like,
nearly
if you mix
control,
a Levan,
and like
you see
the
it the
fact
next
of it
morning,
being alive, and it, you having to sort of facilitate that thing being alive.
It's like a little child,
yeah.
A little pet,
yeah. But it can be such a. It's such a. If you keep it in certain parameters, you can change its characteristics.
Mm.
That's what's amazing, I think, about it. That's just going into specifics now, but how specific you can be with it is quite amazing.
There's also like an intensity then that can build behind it, depending on how much you want to explore the rabbit hole of fermentation. And we don't have, to be honest, neither of us have the sort of scientific...
No.
background, if that makes
not
sense.
Not enough, yeah. I wish we did, but
it is something that is also fairly intuitive, so, you know, you really gain an understanding that way, I feel.
So at what point of the spiritual quest around Europe did you guys think, okay, it's time to wrap this thing up?
When we ran out of money.
That's pretty funny.
We were pretty much run out of money halfway through, but we were being supported by everyone we went to. That was... pretty much it was fuel money, that was about it. I guess once we drank too much wine we began to feel awful. When did we, it went from France and we tried to we were still clinging on to the artist thing a little,
yeah, of course,
and sort of thought maybe we can still do it. Seems bizarre. So then we took on first of all, we went to Germany and we worked for a natural wine grower there, which was incredible. And then from that, we applied for an artist residency in Norway, which was all to do with stockfish, salted cod.
Fermentation.
So we just
again,
kind of wung it.
Fermented
food. Yeah, exactly. It is a fermented food. It's incredible as well. I mean, I never knew anything about it before we did that.
Yeah. Which was amazing because it actually brought us to Lofoten of all areas, this tiny little island like north of Norway. And it was just amazing, like the sort of landscape then that you were in.
Yeah.
So we went from like southern France to Lofoten and then thought, wow. And then at the end of that, I think eventually we just decided, right, that's it. We
that
actually need
bizarre.
To make something work for us somewhere. And then I guess, I don't know why, but both of us then just gravitated back home. Families are all here. I know that obviously not everybody does that, but for us, it always felt like a call to come home for some odd reason.
That was the last thing.
It's strong, though. It's deep in you.
Yeah.
And it only gets louder the further and longer you go from home.
Yeah.
It's so strange.
Yeah.
Like you know, like I shared to you before we started recording, I hate it home. Like, I hated Northern Ireland. I said I would never come back here. And now I'm like, I'm never leaving Tramore. Do you know what I mean? It's very, very strange. But you do have to go sometimes.
Yeah.
It's important.
Yeah, I agree completely. I think, just traveling a certain kind of traveling is extremely valuable, or maybe any kind. I just, yeah, don't know. It certainly was for us, I feel.
So talk about actually coming home then. Like, where did you go? What did you do?
Well, first of all, being used to being in London, we came back and thought, wow, look what you can rent. You can rent a whole house for what you pay for a room in London. So we like thought the world is our oyster. We're going to rent somewhere.
It's like, have you ever been somewhere like in the Far East and like your money is just like worth like 10 times more?
Yeah.
It's when we came back from New York. Like, again, same thing. You're like, the rent's $450? Whoa! It's like, we're living good tonight, guys. Like, this is awesome.
Yeah.
Very different mindset.
Yeah. And it's, and we did think it was great for a while.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
then the sort of.
We realized
the reality.
The idea and the reality exactly of being home really started to set in. And we were like, oh, this is tougher than we thought. And then, I don't know, we started baking. We ran a home delivery service. It was just around the time that COVID happened, and we were baking sourdough in a cast iron pot.
Tons of sourdoughs in a cast iron pot.
We
could
put
ridiculous.
One bread in the oven at one time, and we were having orders going out every week. So
it
we were
terrible.
Baking a lot of
those.
It was
incredibly unenjoyable.
Mate, that sounds like a mad business model as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So what did you sell one sourdough for back then?
We sold a fairly big chunk. I think it was over a kilo, and we sold it for £5. And we also gave everybody like a box of, we had a few of our own chickens at the time, so we were giving people like boxes of eggs as well.
Like that.
So actually, like, it was a pretty good deal as well. Yeah.
End of a restaurant, like they give you a wee mint. That's what that is. That's like, it's like the wee added bonus that keeps you coming back for more.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, okay, £5 per bread. You're keeping your electric oven on. I assume it was electric, or was it gas oven?
It was electric then, like a domestic oven.
Just a normal conventional oven, Wow, crazy. So you guys were pumping bread out then. And then did you deliver it yourself?
In a
pot?
Yeah,
for free. We did a free delivery service across Northern Ireland.
Unbelievable.
So we would have...
Like the whole six counties?
Yeah.
So if I place...
It was mental. Yeah. Completely mental. Oh, we made nothing. Probably
we made nothing.
Lost.
Like, we probably lost. We did lose money then. But
we
like,
just said,
we had
let's
to start,
see what
we
the
take
is and see what it was like. And then
and we had no
so we never
real business
to make
acumen
bread here.
Either. There was no acumen there in terms of managing a business or being like, start. It was all very like hands-on learning from the ground up.
So like, what would your work schedule have been like?
Oh, you just get up like six.
It was
work
better than what it
until,
is now.
Work until like 8, 9, and then sleep, get up, deliver, same again, like day after day. Just
and you're
up,
just
work up.
In that 1 week cast iron pan, you're just banging sourdoughs in and out.
Yeah, all day.
Yeah, that was it.
That's bonkers. Okay.
Yeah, two shells, so it's two, like a bread per shell.
It's actually pretty stupid.
So sometimes you got
to. I love it. It's a great origin story. Okay, so where do you go from the one oven?
So we went from that oven, then we got like a very old pizza oven for £200, which was just, it shouldn't even been worth £200. He should have paid us to take it off him.
No.
It was three phase. We're on a farm, didn't have three phase. We spent more money on a rotary converter to run the electric, to run the oven. So we ran that. We ran that for a good while, actually, and it just burnt everything. It was just, all the elements were broken. All the stones were cracked. It was one-sided. It had one deck that worked out of all four.
It was like a 1970s Dallin oven.
So everything we made was slightly burnt at that stage. But
all customers
really
are like, I love the unique pattern you've put on this bread. It's so so meaningful. You're like, yeah, of course. Here's some free eggs.
But yeah, it allowed us to kind of scale up a bit and start. I think a massive thing for us was the way in which we make bread. Like, I just think bread is so much better when it's bigger, and if you want a smaller bit of it, buy a piece of it, just for the simple fact that bigger just means you get a better crust to crumb ratio. I think personally, people, like, just everyone's got their own opinion,
but that
so we just
really,
started making massive breads all of a sudden. It just went from little ones in a pot to big breads, and we've kind of stuck with that.
That was also really inspired by all of that European travel and things as well, and seeing that
massively
as being very much part of their culture. It was just like, bread's going in the stone oven. The oven's like, you know, wood fired. There's no,
historically bread was big.
Yeah,
really big.
Yeah. So all these things started to come back in here, and then we just really started to run with it.
So most of what we're making now is 2 kilograms, 3 kilograms, half full quarter. That's it.
And we like that, yeah. It's nice fermentation. It's nice crust to crumb ratio. It's like what we personally like. That's the way we're,
It's helpful when you're not in like an ultra controlled, when your bakery's basically not a prover, then it's helpful when you got a bigger mass of dough. The fermentation really ticks along in it.
I gotta say, like, the reason why you guys are here today is because you sell massive bread.
Brilliant, thank you.
Like,
that's all we need to hear.
It's the biggest bread I've ever seen in my life.
Really?
Genuinely, like, I walk in and I see you guys at a market stall, and you know that Mika song that was like, "Big girl, you're beautiful"? It's like, "Big bread, you're beautiful" starts playing in my head, and I'm like, you know, like Tom and Jerry on the old cartoons, whenever they smell something, like the whiff, and then it picks them up by the nose, and they're carried over. I see that happen to people in real time whenever you guys are at the markets. And like we went, I first came across you guys at Elmfield. And we, first time at Elmfield, we took like 8 mates.
Lovely place, isn't it?
Oh, awesome. Yeah. We had Jane on the podcast a couple of weeks ago and she was very cool.
Mm-hmm.
And we all just walked in and we were just like, what the heck is going on at that bread table? Like, I saw something that I've never seen before. The only way I can describe it is like, you know those like emergency life-saving rubber rings?
That is a flagship bread.
Only a bread version of it. Like, tell me about that product. What the heck is that?
That particular one?
Yeah.
That was heavily inspired. When I was working in, when we were both working in Bread Peddler, well, that would have been like one of my favorite breads to make and to eat. It's got just a bizarre flavor profile and texture. It's called Tartano. It's basically a 2 kilogram ring of bread and you sell it by half full quarter. And it's just amazing with like any type of cheese. It's just built for cheese. I mean, I know all bread is, but this is like...
I think Bread Peddler at one time may have made it for... Did they make it for Neil's Yard?
Neil's Yard, yeah. And then bought a lot of it, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, it's heavily inspired by them. And then we just kind of, took that, just made it 100% natural leaven, so all sourdough. It had a wee bit of yeast in it before, and then just pumped the whole load more potatoes in it. So you bake a potato... You scoop out the inside, you dry out the skins, you grind them through a coffee grinder. It's like a very fine powder. And then you just mix that into the dough towards the end of its development. And then it's got a load of thyme and honey. And
we also had a little project, I think, when we first came back, where we started growing our own potatoes, thinking it would be great. Nice. And so we had lots of potatoes at one stage. And we were just like...
What can we do with these
potatoes? All into the bread.
I mean, potatoes are putting bread and sourdough everywhere. They're
all
just,
the time. Yeah.
Like all that stuff, like pre-cooked flour and potatoes, they really help to soften and prolong the crumb of the bread.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Where's the last place I saw you guys? Moira Food Fair. We bought a full one. I don't even care how much it is. I don't care how much bread it is. It's like, I want to eat a whole one of these.
I know.
And I think we were eating it for like 4 days and we had loads of people over and we were just like, caught like every single meal, do you want some of this bread? And it was so good. Like, and it is such an interesting flavor. I didn't know what it was, but now you've said it. It's the honey.
It
gives it that
kind of... It's all kind of, there's no like one overriding flavor. It's all just kind of subtle.
Yeah.
I
love the bits of potato in it. It just makes me happy.
Yeah. They're either love it or hate it. It's like Marmite. Some surprise. People buy it and they're like, oh, flip me. What was that in the bread? Was that garlic?
You have a cult-like following around your croissants.
Yeah.
This is a direct quote. There was a friend of mine. Will I name her? Yeah, I'll name her. A friend of mine called Naomi. And we had booked in to go to the Elmfield Christmas market. And I think she didn't get a ticket or something and she really wanted to go. And she says, whatever you do, can you please throw me one of those ginormous croissants over the fence directly into my mouth? End quote.
Yeah, I do think there's some shrinking to be done occasionally. Sometimes you go to a market where it's particularly outrageous in the size of them.
They're so big.
The main thing about these croissants, which we spent ridiculous amount of work and failures to get this to work. So it's 100. It's
a real
no
love
yeast.
Hate relationship.
Generally, most croissants and artisan bakeries have yeast, and if they're sourdough, they have a bit of sourdough in them with yeast. There's no yeast in these, so it's all natural leaven. It's made in the same way people make panettone.
It's made using, like, more or less... Yeah, I mean, it's kind of like the Levita Madre from similar, panettone. Yeah. It's very similar to that. But it's completely natural leavening. So there's no added yeast whatsoever. There's no, like, sourdough base with a little bit of yeast added in. There's none of that. It's completely conditioned dough, naturally conditioned dough. And then we actually enrich the dough as well.
It's heavily enriched,
so we say it's like Livino Madre, sort of Italian sounding. The actual dough, if you want to be really specific, is a Cornetto dough, it's called, which is... well, some think that it has like history predating croissant. I don't know whether to call it a Cornetto
or croissant. It's kind of like a crossbreed. It's got a ton of butter, egg yolk, sugar. The sugar is kept high in it because it avoids the sourness in the starter. Mm. That's not high enough. You get a lot of sourness coming in, and I hate sourness with sweet in the croissant.
We keep the sugar sort of high in the recipe to counteract any incoming acidity, if that makes sense.
Yeah, yeah. Instead of a ton of fridge time, we'll have a load of proving time. So it's like It's like a, what's the bulk proof? How many hours is that?
The bulk proof is, isn't the bulk proof like 10?
It's about 10 to 12 hours in the bulk proof, and then we have
the finishing proof is
20-hour proof.
18 to 20 hours. So you're talking like 28 to like 32 hours of energy, just like consumed from the prover alone, never mind mixing or anything like that.
I mean,
like
I don't know how to speak about scientifically, but... basically, there's the lactobacillus aren't developing, so there's very low acid, but you can't really detect it. And then there's the yeasts basically are growing very slowly because they're also feeling a lot of pressure from the sugar.
Mm-hmm.
I love that. I can't describe it scientifically. Hold on 10 seconds while I describe it very scientifically.
Lactobacillus. I was like, oh, bro, this guy's bringing up the microbiome here or the bacteria or whatever the heck it is. It's unbelievable. But I remember chatting to you, Hannah, at a market, and I was like,
Going on about your croissants. It's like, mate, these are the best croissants ever. And in not so many words, you were like, yeah, it better be, because it took us like 4 days to make it.
Really tired, bloodshot eyes.
I think I can, like, at the market at that point, I'm just like, I have, like, this is all week. And then it's just like, yeah, here I am. This is the culmination of the week.
But, you know, and I said this to you guys in the email whenever I invited you, like, it's art. Like, I walk in and I look at that table.
Yeah, that moment.
And
I think that,
it's better than a gallery.
Yeah.
Do you know? Like,
yeah.
Forget some weird food-related sculpture. It's like, I walk in and I'm captivated by that. And I hold it in my hand and I break a bit off and I give it to my two-year-old and I share it with my friend. And it's like, that's art in the highest form. It's so good.
Yeah. No, I completely, those places you go to, the markets, the shop fronts. Like in London, we went to the Arches and Bread Pillar was open on Saturday. That buzzed about it. And
that's really, I mean, for us, like whenever we visit other certain bakeries, we get the same thing, if that makes sense. Like,
absolutely.
Like Bread Pillar, Arches and Spa Terminus, definitely. Yeah. Mirabelle was amazing in Denmark, Copenhagen.
Want to go through like all of your products one by one and talk about them because I'm such a fan. It would be like the equivalent of like sitting down with like Snow Patrol and talking about like, can we talk about chasing cars? Okay, can we talk about open your eyes now? Like, give me the backstory. Like, I think I had like a Ferrero Rocher croissant or something from you guys.
You had the twice baked kind of chocolate
that
with the
hazelnut French pan. It should be illegal, or it should be £20, one or the other, because it was so, so good. But you guys have a cider tasting thing you're going through?
So cider is the other big part of what we
fermentation
do. That was the first thing we began doing. We came back here, because we couldn't make wine, so we just started looking at cider more. And I mean, cider's so complicated. It's not to simplify things, but I just think it's so much harder to make well than wine. Cider can get so flavorless, so bad, so easily.
But on the other hand, so complex and so wine-like. And and we sort of came back, first of all, say this quickly, before all of the bread started, and we're like, we'll just make cider. No.
Takes years to make.
Takes years to make.
We were so naive.
Sort of income from it straight away, at least, because it takes years to make. So we did a small harvest the first year, which was 2019. We haven't even released it yet. You know, it's 2022 and we haven't released it.
Made the hype is real.
Yeah. So
it's amazing how it's changing though.
But it needed all that time. It's getting ready now to be released. Like, it's currently, we're like, at the minute, we're like, we're tasting this now, and now this is tasting the way we imagined it.
Yeah.
So like, now we can sort of see it going somewhere, but it's taken from 2019 to 22. It's taken three plus years to get there.
A lot of stuff we don't use,
yeah.
And a lot of talking. So when we've made our first batches, we started talking a lot, or trying to communicate at least. with a lot of the wine growers we knew in France, just to see what was going on. It's like, we just weren't happy with it. It was just not like hitting your palate or your throat. The sensation wasn't there. And at the very beginning, we just wanted to keep it local up in the north. And we were just sourcing whatever fruit we could. But a lot of that fruit is heavily sprayed in the north. It's very hard to get organic fruit with nothing on it, which is something we really want to do. Unless you go around people's gardens and start picking the fruit. But yeah, the first batch of cider we were using were probably coming from sort of sprayed trees, and there was no depth.
Mm.
There's no root structure in the trees. It surfs the tops and sucks what we're giving them.
And we kept asking, like, why? Why is there no depth? Like, what's going on? And then one winemaker in particular, he just said, we didn't, no prior explanation about the cider at all, and he just said, is it conventional fruit or organic? Mm. And we said, okay. And he said, use organic, source organic, and then he said, and give it time.
Very interesting.
That's it, simple. Yeah. And after that, changed everything. We started hand-picking fruit down in Kilkenny, where there's a place called Highbank Orchards, and then we started just getting any apples we could in the north from people's gardens. I mean, predominantly the apples around here in people's gardens are just eating varieties or cooking varieties, so that acid's really high.
Which is great, because you can make something very, like, Prosecco style, like high acid, like loads of bubbles. You can do something like that. Whereas the sort of cider varieties from Kilkenny, from the south of Ireland, are really suited just to really complex ciders where you've got more tannin, like more polyphenol stuff going on, more...
I would still dream of one day owning some of those beautiful old Bramley trees in Armagh and just having them with nothing on them, you know, and owning that area and looking after it a bit and harvesting that. There's definitely a distinctive quality that you can get from those apples. They're really challenging to work with because of the fact there's very low tannins, they're very high acid, and they can become very thin, but they also have a very distinctive quality, and I think they just need a lot of time and a certain way of making the cider.
Tell me about your bakery, because I want to make sure you get out of here on time.
That's true. The bakery is, well, the bakery's on farm. It's farm-based at the minute, and then we're about to open the shop in Hillsborough.
Oh, yeah.
Whoa!
Yeah.
That's the, it. Yeah. So we're building a lot at the minute. Haven't baked in 6 months. And pretty much
forgetting. It's been a long time.
How do you do it?
The shop is set to open on the 3rd of December, which is a week on Saturday.
Oh, my goodness.
We're not ready.
But we're not ready.
we need to open.
You never will be.
Yes. But yeah, it's been pretty painful. In hindsight, trying to do everything ourselves in terms of the building work was maybe the wrong idea altogether, because we could have just kept working and paid other professionals to do it. It's been a massive learning curve.
It's kind of your style, though, isn't it?
But it's coming. Yeah, I hope it's not in the future.
Just see what happens.
I just don't think it's the way to grow things. It's been painful how much it's taken us out of baking. It really has. I mean, you really lose a rhythm that you have to build up over a matter of months again.
Of course.
Yeah, rhythm in a bakery has to be there. Otherwise, it doesn't really work, in my opinion. It just isn't a good bakery, yeah.
Whereabouts is the physical bakery going to be?
The shop.
Yeah.
The bakery, well, the bakery are
the store
manufacturing manufacturing premises is going to be still on the farm, so we're keeping everything there.
It's just too much space.
Your bread's too big.
Yeah,
the oven's too big.
The actual shop, the bakery shop, is going to be 14A Balnahan Street.
I just love your addresses. I love that.
I'm terrible at addresses. Like, I can barely remember my home address.
Situated in Hillsborough, because
as you're entering Hillsborough from the roundabout, from the bottom, and then you're going up towards the hill, there's a turn on the left which goes up another street,
where the Isle and the Pussycat is,
exactly.
Okay,
down towards that junction from the Isle and the Pussycat.
Sweet.
Where did you get that from? That I can't do directions.
Deliveroo. My brain is a Google map. Robotic. Awesome. So wow, you're opening real soon.
Yeah, sort of. Yeah, we'll just do what we were doing to begin with and get in there and
well, you'll start. You'll definitely see me there.
Brilliant.
Yeah.
Brilliant.
I love the bread so much. Genuinely.
We need to get sandwiches in the go at some stage, but there's a lot of prep we need to do before we get into that.
And will you guys like only open weekends, do you think? Kind of like what you've been doing on the markets? Is that
just
because
how small we are currently?
We're probably going to do maybe like a Friday, Saturday, Sunday.
Yeah, cool.
Weekends are nice.
Absolutely.
Go pick up your bread. So it is. Friday, Saturday, Sunday, I think, to start, and then we'll just see how things...
For us, it's important to keep on a bit of wholesale as well. You know, there's always going to be a small portion of our business to wholesale. Purely because I think a bakery has a right to make a certain kind of number.
Yeah, of course.
You know, to serve the populace to some degree.
To feed people, yeah.
Yeah, to feed people, yeah. Fundamentally. And it's not just something, you know, decorative and as a treat, yeah.
Land on the plane then, because it's time for you to go to East Belfast. What has it been like coming home for you guys? Or how has your relationship with Northern Ireland changed over the last 5 years?
That's difficult. Yeah, it's really difficult. I think this whole process of setting up this bakery and making the cider has been a massive struggle, to be honest. It's been great, but it's been extremely difficult to get it all going. And it's come with a lot of sacrifice to do it. But I think it's hard to leave the place at the minute. That's what I'm going to say. Yeah. But having said that, I also miss not traveling a lot.
Sure.
Yeah, completely.
What about you?
Yeah, I think this is the sort of final call, if that makes sense, in terms of giving home a chance.
Sounds like a jail sentence.
Yeah, I know.
No, but it makes sense. It makes sense.
I guess this would be like the last big like push
this,
in order to really start something here. If we really find that we can't consolidate or we can't really do what we see or what we like can envision, then I don't think... That we can't be here.
We won't bend to make it work.
No.
If people don't like
what we're
doing,
we're just not the right fit. Yeah.
I mean, based on the limited market research I've done, people like what you're doing.
Hopefully, yeah.
I showed your Instagram to Jenna, who works at the front here, and she immediately went to the cross section of the croissant and went, wow.
Those Instagrammable cross sections are sort of painful, but sometimes when you look into it, it does look pretty amazing. I mean, I think I'm going to talk about the cross section of a croissant. The goal for us in a croissant is that it's so papery thin and tender, and it's not necessarily
soft.
Chewy.
Yeah,
which a lot of people
like. We don't necessarily even want it to be like really light. You know, we want it just to be soft, like tender, like. Pillowy, I don't know.
It's, buttery, extremely buttery.
Yeah, buttery, sweet, a little sweet. Yeah, certain things that we like.
But I think you guys have, like, the people I talk to, you have a following.
I don't know.
Like,
we're pretty desperate at social media.
At the
it's not our strong point at
all. Yeah.
I mean, so everyone says that.
There's a following, and then there's a following. So there's, like, numbers on a social media platform, and then there's, like, people who talk about your product and love your product and go to markets just to see you and your product.
Markets have been great.
And, you know, I think, like, between the fine residents of Hillsborough and all of the relationships that you've built through your markets, I think this is going to be a massive success.
Well, thank you very much.
I hope you're right.
Yeah, that's very kind.
And if not, I'll plug my pocket money into buying copious amounts of bread anyway, because we genuinely love it. So this is it. You're going to put your roots down. You're going to see if the roots take to the soil.
Yeah.
And then you're going to see what happens.
Yeah, that's
to be continued.
Awesome. Yeah. Well, I look forward to watching this space and seeing what happens.
Unbelievable stuff. Look, thank you so much once again for listening. My name is Matthew Thompson, and we're on a mission to share 350 conversations that celebrate Northern Ireland and the incredible people who call it home. Massive thanks once again to NI Connections for making today's episode possible. And like I said at the top of the show, you can find out more about our global diaspora, listen to other conversations in this series, and sign up to their free monthly newsletter by visiting niconnections.com. Other than that, hope you really enjoyed today's episode. And I look forward to catching you again soon.